This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
How does Abraham respond to the latest incident in his life that, apart from having gone through a life of enormous hardship and great trial and tribulation, culminating with the strange episode that he had of being asked to sacrifice his son, and although it lands up not working out that way, the one permanent outcome of that episode was the loss of his wife, as we learned last week, that she died from some form of shock, disappointment, sadness at what occurred. How does he respond to that? How does he react to that? What does he do? And so the first sentence after Sarah's funeral becomes very full of meaning. The very first sentence after he buries her and he's eulogized her and he's mourned her is Avraham Zakein Barba Yamim, and Avraham was old. Barba Yamim means that he was old, having lived a full life. It's a phrase that is sometimes used with old age and sometimes isn't. But it's the translation of Unkelus, the Aramaic translation that we've often spoken about, is interesting because he translated it Al Bayomin, one who has been elevated by his days. The passage of time has different impacts on people, and what it ought to do to people is elevate them. There is a degree of pathos when one looks around at aging people who make idiots of themselves trying to stay young, when they could, I'm not talking about trying to stay youthful, there's a difference, trying to stay young when they should be enjoying the dignity of the experience of a lifetime. They're dressing up as if they are kids who don't have the experience of a lifetime. Why would one do that? Why would a person with 50 years experience dress up like somebody with 2 years experience? And in any other situation of life, that experience is valued. So I'm not talking about not keeping healthy, I'm not talking about not keeping energetic and not keeping vibrant and not keeping vital. I'm just talking about an attempt to hang on to youth when the passage of time has a very attractive and special impact on people whose days elevate them rather than whose days drain them. If the days are draining you, then age is the opposite of elevating?
Hindrance.
Yes, it would be. It would be degenerating you. It would be pulling you down in every way. If your days are elevating you, then a life of elevating days should have an elevating impact on you. So the dealing with aging should be making sure that each day elevates you. That's the way to deal with aging. You can't reverse the aging process. And why would one want to reverse the aging process? One can hold on to good health, and one can hold on to vibrancy, and one can remain curious, and all the things that one wants to bring with one from one's youth. One doesn't want to leave everything of one's youth behind. But one certainly doesn't want to lose, in the pursuit of youth, to lose those very valuable things that come with the accumulation of age and experience. So Al Bayomin, this Bal Bayomin means a man who has come through his days, a man who has travelled through his days, a man who has experienced things, a man who is what he is because of the days that he's lived. And if we would just take care to make sure that each day of our lives impacts on us and grows us and elevates us instead of pulls us down, that is what the best. Then not only are we countering the forces of ages. Then not only are we countering the forces of aging, but we're actually making aging work for us. If at the end of a day your sense is this day has uplifted me, why would you want to wipe out the impact of that day? And if at the end of a year your feeling is this year has uplifted me, why would you want to wipe out the impact of that year? And the last 5 years and the last 10 years. And the impact of time is even in the when one sees time that way, and one understands time that way, and people use time that way. Even the little telltale aging signs have become charming and meaningful and wise. One can look at an old person who's experienced life in a positive way, and there's a depth in his face with the wrinkles and all. There's a meaning. There's a this is a life that this is a face that's been through life. And the face expresses some of that wisdom. So instead of trying to eradicate the passage of time, what Avraham did was he used the passage of time to elevate him, and that manifests and impacted on his life. So he's an old man, but old with Barbi Yomin. He's old in terms of experience. And it's interesting that in Hebrew, in the Torah, when we use the word zaken, it doesn't necessarily mean age. So when we're given the law, for example, b'tnei sevel takum, you must stand up before an old man. That doesn't mean an old man. Zaken means a wise person, a mature person, an experienced person. So we don't really have a word for age, for old, interestingly enough. Zaken doesn't mean old. Zaken means young. You can have a 30-year-old. If he has that experience, you have to stand up before him. If he has that wisdom, you have to stand up before him, and you treat him as a zaken. So the word zaken doesn't mean old. It means an elder rather than an old person. And an elder is not always an old person. You can have a very young elder. So we don't have a word for old for an old person. We have a word for drained people, for empty people, for tired people, for sick people, for dying people, but not for old people, because there isn't such a thing as a zaken, which means wise, and barbiyomi means one who has come through a lifetime. And that's a different way of looking at the experience of life. And then the next phrase, Vahashem, and God, Beirach et Avraham Bakro, blessed Abraham with everything. So here we've got Abraham now pulling himself together after the loss of his wife, caused by doing God's will in this particular case, and what's his response? Aren't I a lucky man? Bakro, I'm missing nothing. I've been given everything in my life. Yes, my wife has died, but she was 127 years old. It's not unnatural. I've lived a full life. I've been given everything. He doesn't look back and say, what a life. I had to leave home. I had to fight a lonely battle. I was thrown into a furnace. I nearly died. I had to expel my beloved son, Yishmael, and his mother, a woman with whom I had a very affectionate, warm, intimate relationship, as we've discussed. I had to get rid of them. Look what I've been through. And the last thing, by doing God's will, I did what God told me to. My wife dies of shock. I killed my wife. I murdered my wife. What will be coming? Avraham, Hashem berachas Avraham bako. Avraham feels totally blessed. Now, what does he do with that blessing? Does that send him off to the Bahamas on retirement? No. The very next thing that he says is, "Vayomer Avraham el avdo zakan beito." Avraham says to his servant, the elder of his house. So once again, you see the word zakan. Eliezer was necessary, an old man. He was the elder of the house. Hamoshel b'chol ashelo, who managed Avraham's entire estate and business interests. And he tells Eliezer to go and look for a wife for Yitzchak, which is a part that will might start today, but will continue next week. Why this linkage? Because he looks around, he says, I've been given everything, I need to build a future. Yitzchak's a man in his 30s, he's not married yet. Good time for him to get married. And he takes the steps to marry him. So his sense of blessing then is, I have been given every kind of blessing, what can I do with it? How do I invest that in the future? What is missing is taking that blessing and making sure that there's a continuation into the future. Now, what does it mean, God blessed Abraham with everything? Because we know he had a hard life. Not as if he had an easy life. He had a very hard life. So we would gain some understanding of a perception towards blessing if we can understand what Avraham meant when he said, or what the Torah means when it says, and Avraham was blessed with everything. And there are a few different approaches to that we're going to study today. The one is the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says he was given three things. Sorry, four things. And if you've got those four, you've got it all. Isn't that interesting to know now what they are? Yeah, Ibn Ezra tells us four things. You've got these four, you've got it all. What are the four? Number one, length of days. A good, healthy life. Old man is living an active, vital, vibrant life. He hasn't been ill, he hasn't been sick. He's got good health, he's active. Number one. But it's not just good health, it's orech yomim, it's length of days. It's, good health in a lifetime able to be to have impact. Second one, osha, wealth, money. Ever heard people say money is not important? Terry disagrees. Money is one of the four most important things that a person can have. And it's interesting that apart from recent Protestantism, particularly American Protestantism, if there's such a word, no religion says that. Because the church wants you to believe that it's not good to be wealthy. Why? Give your money to the church. Every religion preaches the virtues of poverty, including our own. And where does our own get it from? Well, from the Christians. Straight from the Christians. It's not indigenous to our belief. Our belief is Abraham Berach Hashem Berach Abraham Bakol Osher. One of the four things God gave Abraham, which is called blessing, is wealth. Does that mean one has to spend one's whole life pursuing wealth at the cost of it, at the expense of everything else? No, certainly not. There are other things that are also incredibly important. But is wealth an amazing blessing? Yes. Is wealth only the consequence of one's own efforts? No. People work very hard and they're not blessed with wealth. And there's some people who don't work all that hard and they are blessed with wealth. It's a blessing. It's very often one can be blessed with wealth and not get it. God sometimes gives you a blessing and says, it's there, go and fetch it yourself. Some people he actually delivers it to. Others he tells you, it's at the post office, just go and get it. And we go to some shir and somebody tells us it's more important to learn than to go to the post office. So we learn. So we sit and we learn. The wealth stays at the post office for somebody else. Wealth sometimes is delivered and sometimes we have to go and fetch it and sometimes it isn't there. Sometimes God doesn't bless us with wealth, but what is important is it's a blessing. Let nobody teach their children that wealth is not important. It is important. It's valuable. It's a blessing. It's something one should thank God for. It's something we pray for. And it's something... Why is it so important? Why? Because it gives choices. It enables one to be active. It enables one to be potent, to do things in the world. There's a limit to what you can do without it. There's an enormous limit to what you can do without it. And as Rashi says in Eels, without health you're still okay, but not without wealth. Everybody says, as long as you have health, don't worry about it. It's not so. As long as you've got wealth, don't worry about it. But they can still impact on the world. They can get stock, they can build institutions, they can put people through college and school, they can do all sorts of incredible things. So if you look at your life just as my life and my comfort, that's why what I'm saying is wealth is not there for comfort. That's not why it's a blessing, to provide comfort. That's the... When we Jews say wealth is not important, what we're really saying is your own comfort is not... That's not the issue. Very nice to be comfortable, and that's also a blessing. But when we say that wealth is one of the four blessings, that's because of what you can do with wealth. When we're saying having long days is a blessing, that's not long days to sit in the Bahamas. That's not the blessing. It's not a long day to retire with. Length of days is length of days to be active with. Length of days to be making contributions with. Abraham, look how old he is. Abraham's over 100, well over 100, 130, and nearly 140. And he's active in work. He's running a business. He has a college, an academy. He's running an empire. He's meeting with heads of state. This is an active man at 140. And that's why, length of days is valuable. Length of days is not as long as you've got health and you're okay. Go to all these the beauty parlors and the gym and lie on the beach and vegetate. And that's blessing? No, that's not blessing. Blessing is vitality for a long time, where you can be active and do things, to have the money to be able to do things. And when it comes to potency, to being able to do things in the world, money is actually more important than health. And the fact is, most people know that. They don't like to believe it, but most people know that. Most people, men particularly, but not only men, women too, risk their health in the pursuit of wealth. If health was more important, why would people work so hard? And I'm not talking about people who are working hard because they just need to come out at the end of the month. People are okay. They'll work. The pressure they put themselves under, why are they doing that? Because intuitively we know that we can't live without that. That there's no point in having health without that. To have health and not to have the ability to be potent in the world, that isn't so. God wants us to be active in the world. He wants us to do things in the world. And money is our freedom of exchange. That enables us to do things in the world. But to have health and money alone is not enough either. COVID. Ever heard people say COVID is not important? Mustn't have honor. Flee from honor. The Torah says very short in certain ways, but one has to understand it. Honor here in the sense of dignity, one of the four blessings. You've got to have that too. It doesn't help having the money and the health, and you don't have dignity, because you can't be potent with that either. Part of the potency is that you have the dignity that you're with the money comes a certain authority, with the money comes a certain status, with the money and the health comes the ability, because that simply magnifies the potency as well. It's true that a person without money, with money, without dignity, can still do good things. He can still do charity, but to influence the world, to really be of influence and be able to impact the world, his own moral authority plays a part in that too. That's the dignity. That's the cover that he has. So that's one of the blessings. And the fourth one, body, children, so that you don't feel that it's all for nothing, that it's all for waste, that there is no future. But there's a sense of continuity, there's a sense of an investment in an environment in which that's taking place. Those are the four blessings that a person needs. Not many people have all four. And when there are all four, that's a great blessing. That's God saying to you, I expect some great things from you. That's when they're all four. Some of us have some of them, and that's also wonderful. To have one of them is wonderful. Any one of them is already a blessing. That Abraham, when we're told Abraham was blessed with everything, he had all four. Difficult life, yes. An easy life is not a blessing. Because if you're going to be potent from the world and you're going to be doing things, it's not going to be easy. You're going to be engaging with people, you're going to have disappointments, you're going to have all sorts of things, you're going to have conflict. If you're going to be operating in the world, it's not going to be easy and comfortable all the time. There are going to be times where it's going to be terribly tough. But at least if one has these four vehicles to be able to manage that kind of turbulence, one can manage that. And Abraham had it all, and that's how he looked at his life right after the funeral. He looked around and didn't say, oh, what a terrible life I've had. He looked at his life and said, how privileged I am. I really can't complain. I've got everything it takes to be able to be potent in the world. That's one view. The other view is that if you add up the numeric value of Bakol, because this word Bakol causes the Foshim, the commentators, and the Gemara a lot of difficulty. It's a very sweeping statement, and God blessed Abraham with everything. And it doesn't appear anywhere else in the Torah, that kind of statement. He blessed him with everything. What do you mean with everything? So that it's an unusual word for the Torah to use. God blessed him with, there's a saying, with wealth, with this, with that, with that, with everything. So the Ibn Ezra says, if you've got those four, you've got everything, and that's why it says everything. Rashi says, if you add up the words Bakol, Bet is 2, Kaf is 20, Lamed is 30, so that is 52, which relates to Ben, which is a great son. And that's why it leads into the question of marrying off his son. So he looks around and says, what have I really got? I've lost my wife. I nearly lost my son. So what's my greatest blessing? My son, almost as if God is giving me a message. You've got a son, but where's the future? Why aren't you doing something with the son? And that's the message that Abraham takes away from the near sacrifice. Why did I nearly lose Isaac? I nearly lost Isaac because sooner or later Isaac would die in any case. And there's no future. He's a man in his 30s, and not only isn't he married, there's no one to marry. I'm living in Canaan. There's nobody here to marry. And I'm an elderly man, so what's going to happen now? So that motivates and prompts Abraham into looking at his son and seeing everything in his son. So how we have to understand Rashi, or all Rashi says, is the numeric value of Ben, of Bakol, is son, Ben, 52. And since he had a son, he had to marry him off. That's all Rashi says. What I'm in expanding that to understand is that he's drawing that lesson from the Akedah, from the near sacrifice, and saying, oh my goodness, this was a narrow shave. I nearly lost my son. I did lose my wife. What is God saying? God is saying, in your massive empire and all your impact and all your influence, you're neglecting your son. Get him married, build a family, find the right person for him, help him find the right person, and invest in that direction, which he then proceeds to do. But there's a third view. The third view is an interesting one. The Gemara is broken up into a number of subsections. Hashem berach et Avraham bakol. And Hashem gave Avraham everything. What does that mean? Rabbi Meir says there are two. There's a view of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and a third view. Rabbi Meir says, "My bako." What does it mean? Shelo haitalo bat. He didn't have a daughter. That was the blessing. That's the right thing to say to a lady, isn't it? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shehaitalo bat. Rabbi Yehuda says exactly the opposite. The blessing was he did have a daughter. Interesting. Opposite. So one says, lucky man, he had no daughters. The other one said, lucky man, he had a daughter. A daughter about whom we hear nothing. Acherim omrim bat haitalo l'Avraham uvakol shema. Others say he had a daughter and her name was Bakol. So when it says, and Hashem blessed Avraham with Bakol, a very wonderful daughter called Bakol. So we have three different views. And we need to try and understand them. The Gemara says, I'm going to be mischievous. I'm going to tell you what the Gemara says just before this. I wasn't going to. I'm just going to be mischievous. So don't shout at me. It's the Gemara. I'm just reading and translating. The Gemara says, "Ef shal oilam beloy bosem uvelo bursi." The world needs perfume and the world needs hides. Ashrei mishu umanato busmi oilam mishu umanato bursi. Lucky is the man who works with perfumes, and it's not bad for the man who has to work for hides. But you need them both. But it's a blessing if you have to work in a profession which is pleasant and nice smelling and a good environment, rather than to work in a bad environment. In the same way, says the Gemara, "Yefshel oilam blois chorim uvelo nekevis." The world needs males and needs females. Ashrei lemisha bonav zechorim oilo lemisha bonav nekevis. So some people have got sons, some have got daughters. You need both, but it's nice to have boys.
It's nice to have what?
Boys. Sons. Both. No, not for both. Sons. Not both. No, just sons. That's what the Gemara says. I don't think it's Gemara in Beit Yaakov, I don't think.
That when girls put on perfumes, yeah. It's kind of rare.
So what does it mean? And then the Gemara leads on to this and says, and when it says, and Abraham blessed, and God blessed Abraham with everything, it means, according to Rabbi Meir, no daughters. Now what does this mean? Sorry? No, but what it's saying is the perfumes of the men, believe it or not. I don't know, the male perfuming business could take this Gemara as a good marketing exercise, but that's what the Gemara is. So what is it all about? What it says here, the Ramban explains. What does it mean when Rabbi Meir says that he didn't have a daughter? V'zu lo librocha. This was a brocha for Abraham. Ki lo haya yochol lahasiya rak livnekran ha'arurim. Who could he have married her off to? Who would this girl, what would her social environment have been? For Abraham to have to go through his life with a daughter that he couldn't marry off because the environment, with the people to whom he would have to marry her were just so far below her, that it would be such a suffering for her and would ruin everything he was building, and the future would be no future, and the children wouldn't have the value system of an Abraham. To raise a daughter in Canaan would have been a curse. Abraham was blessed not having had a daughter. Now you can imagine how Abraham must have craved a daughter. Every father does. Imagine how he must have craved that and prayed for that. And what Rabbi Meir is saying is sometimes the blessing is in the things we're not given to, because the pain that having it would give us, and the consequences, things beyond our control, could destroy us far more than not having it. And for Abraham to have to raise a daughter in an environment where she had no social circle at all. A man can still create his own social circle, and he can teach, and he can have his business interests, and he can sort of do his thing, and it's not the end of the world. He's passed nearly 40, he's not married. No particular interest in getting married. Abraham actually has to motivate the marriage. For a girl to be in an environment where not only is there nobody to marry, there's nobody to be with, there's nobody to interact with. But he's in Canaan. This is the bottom of the barrel of society. This is like living in darkest Africa, and no society, like Albert Schweitzer sitting in darkest Africa. He was an old man when he went there. He didn't go with his children. But imagine he would have gone to Africa in those days with a daughter. What kind of life would that have been for the daughter and for the parents? And this is his world, this is where he's operating. So what Rabbi Meir is saying, and that's the meaning when this Gemara says, happy are the ones who have to have sons rather than daughters, is just because as hard as it is to bring up a daughter in a tough a son in a tough environment, it's harder to bring up a daughter in a tough environment. And so, of course, we need boys and girls, and it's a wonderful simcha to have boys or girls, and one enjoys and loves them all. There's no, the Gemara is not crazy. Obviously, there is that. But there is a sense of comfort. What the Gemara is doing here is comforting those people who don't have daughters. And we'll understand in a moment why that father-daughter relationship is so critical. And a father who hasn't got a daughter suffers. And Rabbi Meir is saying, but there is a good side to it too. The good side to it is you don't have the trials and tribulations of having to raise a daughter in a hostile environment. That's something very threatening, something very difficult to do. So that's the one. We're going to have a look at that. So what's interesting then is what the Torah is telling us is, what has Abraham been doing all this time for the last 50 years? He's been teaching, and he's been building a community. Why among his disciples would there be nobody fit for his daughter? He's got a yeshiva going. You mean to say there's not one yeshiva bocher in Canaan that would be suitable for his daughter? To the extent that we have to be told that it was a blessing that he didn't have a daughter. We'll come to Rabbi Huda's view in a moment, which is the blessing that he did have a daughter. But the blessing that he didn't have a daughter, that means there is a view, a very important view in the Gemara, that so sterile was the social environment, not only sterile, but negative, that he was lucky not to have had a daughter. How could it have been that sterile when the man has been busy 50 years in the educational business? Surely there's some people who she could have mixed with? So, which leads us to a very disturbing conclusion that Abraham did not develop students that he would take as a son-in-law. So who were these people? And what was wrong with them? And why could he never overcome that? The Ramban says, because they were all descended from Khan. So they're all descendants of Ham. They're living in the land of Canaan. They all have slave mentalities. You don't want a son-in-law with a slave mentality. A slave mentality is provide for me. That's a slave mentality. And if you force me to work, I'll work. But I have a right, I have an entitlement. That's a slave mentality. Security. I want security. Whether it provides for me, for my pension, for my family, I want security irrespective of whether I work or not. A slave is entitled to security even if he doesn't work, just by virtue of being your slave. If you buy a slave, you're responsible for him. And the slave knows that and finds comfort in that. That's the Canaan environment. When you're working with a Canaanite, when you're working with somebody who is inherently slave mentality, you can't make a Jew out of it. Because a Jew is the opposite. A Jew is, I don't want security that I haven't earned. I don't want security that I haven't worked for, that I haven't built myself. And no matter what he could teach the Canaanites, he couldn't turn them out from being Canaanites. And of course there's the whole episode which we'll study next week where Eliezer kind of hopes that his son, Eliezer himself has a son. Eliezer is the greatest disciple, a daughter. Eliezer is the greatest disciple of Abraham. Imagine what his son is, who's learnt and lived in Abraham's house. And Eliezer is amazed that his daughter is not considered for Yitzchak. So as great as these people were, and as much as they had studied, they could never cross the line. They could never become descendants of, or they could never become fit to marry into Avraham's household. They could have all the intellectual knowledge, but they couldn't have the, and didn't have, the qualities that were required to perpetrate the Jewish soul, the Jewish personality. What is the difference in those qualities? We have two different statements. One is in Pirkei Avot that says the following. Find it here. Kol mi shiyesh bo shloisha dvorim halalu. Anybody who has the following three characteristics, hu mi talmido shel Avraham Avinu, is a disciple of Abraham. Shloisha dvorim acherim, hu mi talmido shel Bilam Arashi. And if you have the other three, you are a disciple of Bilam. So here's a diagnosis. If you want to know whether you are a disciple of, not a descendant of, a disciple of Abraham or a disciple of Bilam, both brilliant people, both leaders, both prophets, both spiritual, What's the difference? If you're Abraham, then you will have Ayin Tova, generosity. You'll look at Ayin Tova. Remember the shiur on Monday night, last week, Monday night, of Ayin Hara. Turn that, the opposite is Ayin Tova. Ayin Hara is looking at somebody else's achievements with resentment and jealousy. Ayin Tova is celebrating somebody else's achievements. That's what Ayin Tova means. So if you are a person who looks at what somebody else has got and enjoys that, enjoys seeing what somebody else has got, you're a descendant of you're not a descendant, a disciple of Abraham. Ruach Nemucha, a spirit which is low, and a Nefesh Shefola, and also kind of a lowly spirit, modesty, humility. So the essential qualities that you can study from Abraham are humility and generosity of spirit. That's a student of. And Bilam is the opposite. Arrogance and meanness. Arrogant person usually has low self-image, and that's why he's arrogant, to try and compensate for his low self-image. With that low self-image, he resents what other people have got. So if you look at the essence of it, the disciple of Abraham is somebody with great self-image. Great self-image means humility and generosity of spirit. Poor self-image, you're from Bilam, so poor self-image means big ego, very arrogant, and meanness of spirit. Those things have to be tested to see who you are. And the Pirkei Avot is not written for the world, this is written for the Jews. That means there are Jews who are disciples of Bilam, and there are Jews who are disciples of Abraham. And Pirkei Avot was not written for irreligious Jews. Pirkei Avot was written for people who are studying the Torah. That means among the people who are studying the Torah, some people are descendants of students of Abraham, and some students are students of Bilam. And what it's saying is, watch out. Don't think because somebody's studying the Torah, therefore he's a frum Jew. Yes, he's a frum Jew. Frum Jew means I'm descendant from Abraham and I keep the mitzvot. Have I learnt Abraham's lesson? That's a different story. That depends on the relationship between arrogance and humility and generosity of spirit and meanness of spirit. So that's a disciple of Abraham. I'm just going to go one step further and then I'll take a question. The other statement is a statement in the Gemara that reads as follows. Shlosha simonim yesh b'umazu. This nation has three signs. We're diagnosing what is a Jew now. See the difference. Pirkei Avot is, among Jews, there are disciples of Abraham and there are disciples of Bilam. But what is a Jew? Three characteristics. Rachmonim, Baishonim, Gomlei Chasodim. They can empathize. They are Baishonim. They have Busha. Busha means they know how to be guilty. They know how to feel guilty. Okay, the kind of things that psychologists say we shouldn't feel, that's what differentiates us, and that's part of our problem. That's why we're messed up people sometimes too, because we use the guilt incorrectly. The guilt is meant to mobilize us into action, not to paralyze us into inaction. So we have Rachmoni, we empathize with other people, we can anticipate people's needs, that's Rachmoni. Baishonim is we feel embarrassed, we are capable of embarrassment, we are sensitive, that's what Baishonim is. Sensitive people. Now when the sensitivity becomes paranoia, it becomes an illness. But the absence of sensitivity is non-Jewish. And a Jew has to be able to walk that balance. And if he isn't living a full life, a full spiritual life, that's when it gets out of sync and his sensitivity becomes paranoia. And his rachmonis, his ability to empathize, becomes liberalism. And the third one is gomlei chasodim. Kindness. And you remember kindness as opposed to rachamim. Rachamim is anticipating somebody's needs, and gomlei chasodim is attending to his needs for self-esteem, uplifting people, making people feel good. That's what a Jew is. A Jew is all three. Other nations have one of the three, two of the three, some individuals this, some of the individuals that, but the Jew is standardized in the sense that anybody who is Jewish has these three, and any non-Jewish, what this Gemara is saying is any non-Jew who has these three should become Jewish and is very welcome to become Jewish. But if he doesn't, he shouldn't. Judaism is not for somebody who doesn't have these three qualities. It will drive him crazy if he doesn't value these three qualities and have these three qualities. So I want to look at the difference between what identifies a Jew and what identifies a disciple of Abraham. So in these three statements, we can see they're not the same. Abraham had an academy, he had a yeshiva. What did he teach them to be? Humble, understand God, the greatness of the universe. I'm nothing inside the universe compared to how big the universe is and how great God is. And I am Tova. How to be? Once I am humble, I can afford to be generous. of spirit. That he taught. And Eliezer has it. You see it in Eliezer. And all the people that were in Abraham's academy had that. But could he teach them these three? Rachmanim, Baishonim, and Gomlech Hasodim. Could he teach them those three? That you can't teach. You either go or you don't. If you've got it, you can become a better Jew. You can become a Jew, you can become a good Jew. If you don't have it, becoming a Jew won't help. And learning Torah won't help. And becoming religious won't help. You don't get it from those things. You don't develop sensitivity from becoming religious. You become religious because you have these three and you want a place to express them. You want a framework within to express them. There is an assumption, an erroneous assumption, that becoming religious makes good people. Becoming religious doesn't make good people. Becoming religious makes bad people worse and good people better. That's all it does. No guarantee. It takes who you are and it magnifies that. And if you're a bad person, the religion itself magnifies the badness. If you're a good person, the religion magnifies the goodness. But the raw material doesn't change. You've got to start with the right material. And Abraham was working with Canaanites. Canaanites are slaves. They don't have these qualities. They don't value these qualities. That's why they've descended from Ham. And there's no way that could change. That would always be so. And he wasn't prepared to marry his daughter to these people. And if that's the society in which you live, you're better off without daughters. That's what the Gemara is saying. When you understand the Gemara in its full context, if that's the society in which you're living, you're better off without daughters rather than to have daughters interacting with that society and having to go through the Agmas Nefesh, all the frustration and anguish of your daughter mixing in that society. The final point before I take questions is, what about today's American young women? How do they rate on the Baishonim, Gomlei Chasodim, Rachmonim scale? Generally, I'm not talking about dinner. I'm sorry, look at the people that Jewish society is raising across the board in America. If we were to take a general sort of survey and say, how is our society of young Jewish women, of young Jewish American women, rating on a scale of 1 to 10 in these three qualities? Yes, and yes. Across the board, generally. Makes a difference. Remember I said to you, religion makes no difference. No difference. These three elements, no difference between the religion and the religious and irreligious. No difference at all. Well, exactly. I was going to say exactly that. Compare this.
Out of that realm.
Absolutely.
There was the shunning. There was a way of
and Gomlei Chasodim and Rachmonim.
Yeah.
What is it that, these three qualities, are they passed on, or are they brought into the family, primarily by the man or the woman? These three qualities, are these men qualities or female qualities? They're female qualities, all three of them. That means men have to have them. But these are really feminine characteristics. You're talking about empathy, sympathy, kindness, bushah, modesty, sensitivity. These are feminine characteristics. And that's why Judaism passes down through the matter. Because these are the qualities, the other things, generosity and all that a father teaches. Those are values which a father teaches, like Abraham taught to his students. But Jewishness is taught by the mother, because Jewishness is feminine characteristics. It's humanistic characteristics. What has the feminist movement done in Western civilization? It said, we women don't have to be softies. Fine, but then don't complain when Jewish men marry Asian women who decide that they do want to be softies. Softies are not in a negative sense. It's in the sense of, despite their ability, and Asian women are very savvy and are able to run businesses, but when they run businesses, they don't lose these three qualities. They run their businesses with these three qualities. And that's what to be fine. So when we look at intermarriage, what is our response? What should our response be to intermarriage? What can we do to stop the men marrying Asian women or non-Jewish women? That's not the response. Our response is, what are we doing wrong in our educational system that our men aren't finding what they need? Not that the men are angels, I'm not suggesting that for a moment. I'm just talking about that side of the equation. There's a whole men's side of the equation, but we're talking about women. What can we do? This ties into last Monday night's share. Not, oi, terrible men, they're marrying out. What can we do about these terrible men? That might be so, but we've got to look at ourselves and say, what do we do about this? In what way are we raising our daughters incorrectly? Not to have the qualities that one would see, that Abraham was better off not having a daughter for, rather than have his daughter lose those three qualities because of the society in which she operated. Mm-hmm. Let me take a few questions. Sorry, you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I have three.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So there's a machlokas whether Abraham had a daughter or not.
Yes.
It's not clear.
Not clear.
Second one was.
And we will discuss next week if I remember to get onto it. Why, if he did have a daughter, we hear nothing of him.
Could we be a disciple of a mixed marriage?
Can we have a mixture of both qualities in us? Appears not. Very interesting question. Seems quite black and white-ish. You're either this or you're that. These are the qualities. Why? Why? Yes, but in the wording. In the wording, what the Mishnah is surprisingly black and white on this issue, whereas on most issues it's not. On this issue it's saying, check these three qualities. If you've got these three, you're Bilam. If you've got these three, you're Avram. What happens if you've got some of one and some of the other? I'm not sure that you can have that. I don't know about an arrogant person who has a generous spirit. And I haven't seen true arrogance and true generosity I'm talking about, not apparent arrogance. One has to know what arrogance is and how to test it. True arrogance and true generosity I've never seen go together. Maybe there are people who have it. And I've never seen people who have true humility and meanness. They don't go together. So the Mishnah seems to be drawing a line down the side and saying there's healthy self-esteem that translates into generous spirit and humility, and there's poor self-esteem that translates into meanness of spirit and arrogance. And those qualities go together and are not a question of descent, it's a question of attitude. A Bilam attitude or an Avraham attitude, you can't have a mix. These are two different worlds. These are completely two different worlds. There are many things you can have mixed, but there's some things you can't have mixed. You can't have a person who's half Jewish and half not Jewish. A person is either 100% Jewish or 100% not Jewish. There's no 99.9% Jewish. And you can't be kind of pregnant, and you can't be kind of kosher. I mean, there are certain things that are black and white, even though most things in life aren't. And here we seem to be, although it's a human issue, the Mishnah seems to be very clear that you're one or the other, that they just don't mix.
It's very interesting, though, because I see a lot of murky water, depending on the situation.
You see, in life or in the Mishnah?
In life.
Yeah, you need to know how to analyze. Bring them to me one day, and we'll have a look at them, and you'll probably find that the arrogance that you're talking about is not arrogance, the humility is not humility, the generosity is not generosity, and the... When you define clearly what those qualities are and how you identify them, I've never seen them going together, but maybe they are. Whether that's two questions or the third one.
My comment about women today, I'm actually quite optimistic.
Good.
Maybe you everyone jumps, but I think there's a real turnover around the world.
Yes, there is the beginning of a turnaround.
That's beautiful.
There is the beginning of a turnaround. There is the beginning to turn around. The problem is that the last 30 years of the other way has destroyed men. The women are now turning around and saying, with the women it didn't destroy, the women it was temporary, and so the women are now saying, we went down that route, it didn't give us satisfaction, let's turn. Great, we've turned, now we're the men. And they're looking around and saying, but there aren't any men. Yes, is this the men? Because in the last 30 years we've annihilated men. Not only the women, lots of things annihilated men. But part of what annihilated men was the disappearance of women. So there's a massive backlash that it's all very well to say, women, we've now decided to turn around. Yeah, but it might take another 30 years before the men catch up to that turnaround. And by then the women might be onto some new thing. So yes, one's optimistic in that the mistake of 30 years ago is being realized. The impact on society is incredibly complex, and it's going to be interesting to see how it starts resolving. But what we're looking at right now is those women who have truly turned around having enormous problems finding men. Enormous problems. Okay, I just want to go in an order because I don't know if we're going to manage everybody.
Karen, okay.
I just
want
to
know why Hashem sent
him
to Canaan where he couldn't make things out of him. For 50 years he's been teaching these people who were going to never be Jews. Why?
I agree, that's a good question.
Why would
you invest so much effort in people that are
not... That's why I was trying not to take Karen's question. I used to come up with a question. Because probably to create, if he could have success, in other words, what was his role? His thing was not to make Jews. Jews are descendants of Abraham. His thing was not to make Jews. His thing was to teach monotheism. And if he could do it in Canaan, he could do it anywhere. And it would be done anywhere. So if the model could work there. So yes, he made these better people, much more moral people. And he raised a whole standard and a level of morality. And Canaan was a center of all sorts of things happening. It was a very important part of the world. It was a trading center. It was a place where people met, and has been ever since. So one understands that that was his platform, but his purpose was not to make Jews. His purpose was to teach certain principles. Like I always say with Ashura, this is not to make people from. People must make themselves whatever level of observant they want to be in. Isn't it the thing from? Our job is not to make people from. I'm not interested in making people from. I'm interested in helping people through the Torah become greater people. And better people in whatever way they want to take that and use it. That's what we should be doing. If the spin-off is that, is that some people start using Shabbos and some people... That's great, that's wonderful. But our job is not to make people frum, it's their own business. And it wasn't Abraham's business to make them Jews or to make them frum, it's to teach the principles of Torah. And even to teach them, there's no reason why Cain and I shouldn't learn those principles. But to become somebody fit to marry my daughter? No. And what it teaches us also is sometimes you are that, sometimes you find yourself in a situation where even the most ideal in your society, you've got to know, is not for you. That the most, that the cream of the society in which you're operating is not for you. You might be working in Hollywood and you might have to know that I'm working in the society and I'm doing things here and I'm having impact here, that this is not my value system. And even the princes of Hollywood are not my princes. And one has to be able to look at that. Abraham spent a lifetime working with people who would never marry into his family. Okay, we can take one more question. Who was the next one? Are you watching? Sorry? Sorry. Sorry. Yes. There certainly are, as we were talking about, the whole question of feminism, of eradicating that claim, raises the question, if you cannot acquire those traits, you either have them or you don't, can you lose them? And I have no doubt that you can. Whether you lose the potential, they might be buried deep down somewhere and they can arise again sometime in some future generation, that I'm not sure about, but that a person can stop functioning with them, can start acting in a way that shows no evidence of those three. Yes, so either we're dealing with somebody who is actually not Jewish, who's somewhere back in his background, comes from a non-Jew who never converted, and he's actually not Jewish, although we don't know, so we've lost track of these things, or he's lost his Jewishness. No, you can have a person who's in actuality not Jewish, but we don't know about it. So six generations ago, a mother was not Jewish, and we just don't have that information, and they've lived as Jews ever since. Technically, that person is not a Jew. But he's treated socially as a Jew, but technically he's not a Jew. Or you might have somebody who is technically a Jew, but has lost his Jewishness. And there are Jews who've lost their Jewishness. Absolutely, they're Jews. Just as there are human beings who lose their humanity. And that can happen, where you have nothing left of what a human being is. So there can be Jews who've lost their Jewishness. And while they're technically Jewish, they're a shell of a Jew. They're not. And the same situation here. Abraham was converting people. Not for his daughter to marry. These people, many of them were converted, they were technically Jewish. But technically Jewish isn't enough. There's such a thing as Jewishness. And that's what we should be looking at, not how religious one is, or how technically Jewish one is. How much Jewishness does this person have? That's why I say to our people, Karen, our job is to encourage Jewishness, not Judaism. The essential qualities of being Jewish is what we need to develop. Okay, I think we need to leave it there. We'll carry on with the same topic next.